Hello. This talk is about international historic preservation law. In this presentation, I'm going to explain something about the various types of historic preservation laws that exist around the world and discuss some of the main types and patterns of historic preservation laws that we find in different countries. As I've said earlier in the class, every country that I know of has historic preservation and archaeological laws, but they vary quite widely from one country to another. The interesting thing is, though, that the variation in these laws is not random, arbitrary, or idiosyncratic. So, you know, it's not as though every country just like makes up its own historic preservation laws and they tend to vary completely and utterly from one place to another. In fact, they tend to follow a pretty clear pattern. But to understand that pattern, you have to know something about the types of legal systems that exist around the world. You may be surprised to discover that the kind of legal system that you're most familiar with, that of the United States, is not actually the most common type of legal system that we find around the world. There are two main types of legal systems around the world, civil law systems and common law systems. And in fact, the civil law systems are at least numerically more common than the common law systems, which we have, or we have a common law system. Civil law systems derive ultimately from Roman law, combined to some extent with medieval canon law and the Napoleonic Code. And civil law developed primarily in continental Europe and eventually was exported to most of the colonies or former colonies of the continental powers, like what? France and Spain and Germany, Russia, places like that, right? Now, in civil law systems, emphasis is placed on codifying the law. So laws are passed as codes, right? And these contrast in some respects with common law systems because the laws in civil law countries tend to be relatively detailed, specific, and lengthy. When legal cases arise in the court systems, judges do not usually have to interpret the law in the way that we are accustomed to seeing in the United States. Rather, they use a set of predetermined procedures for finding or determining guilt or innocence or determining liability or responsibility in specific cases. Whereas, of course, we know that in common law countries, judges make decisions that represent interpretations of the law. So in civil law systems, judges do not really interpret the law. They follow predetermined legal procedures, and their findings, their case law, does not constitute a body of precedent that is binding on future decisions made by other judges. In addition, civil law is sometimes characterized as inquisitorial. You know, our court system is said to be adversarial, right? There are defense lawyers and prosecutors, and there's an adversarial system, and there are two sides that sort of fight it out in the courts. In civil law countries, you know, judges and the police and the prosecutors essentially investigate and arrive at a determination. And so there are many important differences, and it is a little bit difficult to generalize. I should, I suppose, emphasize that I'm generalizing grossly because, of course, there are, I don't know, 100 countries that have civil law systems, and of course, they're all different. And then the common law countries also have different laws, but the general outlines of the systems do fall into these broad categories of civil law countries and common law countries. In common law countries, things are somewhat different than in civil law countries. Common law grew out of traditional or customary law, mainly in England, and then was historically transmitted to the colonies and former colonies of England. And, of course, England had a huge empire that encompassed a very significant fraction of the world at one time or another, and consequently, common law, English common law, is very widespread, but primarily among the former colonies of England or the British Empire. In common law, the laws or statutes passed by the legislature or the parliament tend to state general principles and assign powers and responsibilities and punishments and things like that, but they tend not to be as detailed and specific as the codes of laws that are issued in civil law countries. Judges then, in the common law system, interpret the laws in specific cases and express their judgments and decisions or interpretations in written decisions, which create precedents, and those precedents are binding on other judges in future cases within the certain laws having to do with jurisdiction, right? So, for example, you know, we have a number of federal district courts, and a decision in one district court is not necessarily binding as precedent in another judicial district, and so on and so forth, because we have different sets of courts, and the rules for determining whether a precedent is binding in a particular jurisdiction are complicated. One of the principles of common law is sometimes called in Latin stare decisis, which means essentially judges are expected to respect existing precedents, right? And that's an important and characteristic principle of common law, which simply doesn't occur or generally doesn't occur in civil law countries. As I said before, common law countries tend to have adversarial court systems, and therefore the roles for judges and juries and prosecutors are very different in common law countries as opposed to civil law countries. There are also a couple of other kinds of legal systems around the world that are not as common as the two I've just discussed. There are countries where they have systems of religious law. At one time, canon law that we would associate with what is today the Catholic Church was relatively common and widespread, not so much anymore. However, Islamic law seems to be becoming more common, some form of Islamic law or Sharia. Places like Iran and Afghanistan and other places have a form of religious law. And then there are countries that have systems of customary law, which are perhaps idiosyncratic or unique to that particular country and are simply based on its legal and cultural traditions. If you turn to the next slide, you'll see a map of the world showing the countries where the countries are colored according to the type of legal system they enjoy. So blue is civil law. The sort of muddy brown or reddish brown is common law. The dark brown is mixed, and that is usually a mixture of civil and common law. And the gold color are countries with religious law. Now, it's hard to, you know, generalize because, particularly with the passage of time, some of these legal systems are blending in different ways. But you can see, I think, the pattern pretty clearly in the map. You know, the map in some respects is a history of migration, conquest, and colonization, right? So the common law countries are almost all or all former British colonies, right? The United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, Nepal, Nigeria, British Guiana, Belize, which was once British Honduras, Liberia, Sierra Leone, Kenya, Tanzania, Zambia, Malawi, and of course Britain and Ireland, right? So whereas the civil law countries, which are the blue ones, are almost all European in tradition or former European colonies. And they constitute by far, I think, the largest part of the globe geographically, as well as being numerically the most common. Some of the mixed systems are interesting. They mostly represent a mix, as I said, of common and civil law. So you can see Quebec and Louisiana, which, as you may know, were, you know, French colonies before they were English colonies. And I think Puerto Rico and the Philippines are both sort of interesting combinations because they were, what, Spanish colonies before they were American colonies, right? There's a patch of brown in southern Africa where we have countries that were originally Dutch or German and then became British and have sort of a complicated legal history as a result. So, the countries with religious law, which are gold-colored, are almost exclusively Muslim, as far as I can see. And therefore, the religious law is primarily Islamic law. So what's the relationship here? Why am I talking about this? Why are you listening to this? Ask yourself that. Antiquities laws tend to follow a pattern that is related to the type of legal system that they have, right? So civil law countries tend to have very strict preservation laws. Generally speaking, all antiquities and archaeological sites are declared to be national patrimony and therefore government property. Therefore, permits are required for all archaeological excavations. Unauthorized excavation is prohibited. Artifacts and remains are all the property of the government normally. And sometimes the government does most or all of the archaeology itself. In other words, you know, they may not have private contractors doing archaeology, although it varies and it changes. It used to be that, in some countries, they used to do all the archaeology themselves, and now they have private contractors doing some of it, or they hire temporary employees. It varies from country to country, but the government plays typically a much more salient or outstanding role in the actual conduct of archaeology than in common law countries. And they also tend to finance a lot more archaeology than the governments do in common law countries. So in theory, at least, in civil law countries, these very strict preservation and archaeological laws mean that, at least on paper, archaeological sites tend to have very strong protections. Whether or not that really works in practice, whether or not the government is effective or ineffective, is a whole nother set of issues. In common law countries, one of the principles of common law that plays a prominent role in archaeology is the so-called castle doctrine. And I mean castle like C-A-S-T-L-E, like my home is my castle, right? The castle doctrine refers to, in common law, the inviolability of private property. Private property owners in common law countries tend to have almost total control over their property. And you're probably familiar with that idea. Right here in Florida, the do not retreat law, whatever we call it, right? Somebody comes into your house and, like, basically you can shoot them, right? Your home is your castle. And really, nobody can tell you what to do in your own home, with very few exceptions. Certainly, federal and state governments have very little power to tell you what to do in your own home, right? So the idea here is that the relationship to archaeology is that, frankly, if the Parthenon were in my backyard and I owned it, I could bulldoze it without breaking the law. That's not true in most countries. That wouldn't be true in a civil law country. You know, for the longest time, for example, Chichen Itza, the famous Maya archaeological site, which is supposedly one of the new wonders of the ancient world or something like that, for a very long time, and this may still be true, it was on private property. And yet the government ran it, you know. I mean, there's a wall around it. They charge admission. There are tour guides, all kinds of crazy stuff going on, right? But it was technically owned by a private citizen who had absolutely no control over it and would have been immediately arrested if he knocked down any of the buildings, right? Now, that's in Mexico. And guess what? Mexico is a civil law country where antiquities are considered national patrimony and are inviolable, you know. They themselves cannot really be touched by anybody without government authorization. If you're interested in looking into this more, UNESCO, the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, has a database of preservation laws from countries around the world, and you can click on the link and look at some of the laws from different countries. Now, sometimes those laws are only in the language of the country. So, you know, if you want to look at Afghanistan's laws, they might be in Dari. I don't know. And if you can't read Dari, you know, you're maybe out of luck. But in some cases, even for countries where the native language is something other than English, sometimes the laws have been translated for one reason or another, and you can read them. So feel free to take a look at that. And I think what you'll find is that in common law countries in general, there's much less regulation of antiquities or archaeological sites on private land, and the regulation of archaeological materials and sites focuses on public lands and on publicly funded projects. I am going to end this particular audio file and start another one in which I will finish discussing this particular presentation. Thanks.